This is WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo. Purdue University Press is out with a new book, The Midwest Farmer's Daughter in Search of an American Icon. The author is Zachary Michael Jack, and he joins me on the phone to talk about the book. Hi, Zachary.
Hello, Mike.
You're a faculty member, we should say, at North Central College in suburban Chicago, but you come from a long Iowa farm family. Is that what led you to write about this book?
I think it is. I mean, I think we all reach a stage in our lives where we start to kind of put together the pieces of how not only we became what we are, but how our families sort of became who they are. And I've fully reached that stage, and I think for the last 7 or 8 years, I've been intensively researching and living agriculture and agricultural studies, and I think that I look at it as a bit of a whodunit, that in some ways it's an unraveling of a mystery. I was born at the very end of 1973, and farming has changed a great deal since then, and it changed a great deal in my childhood. And so now that I have my wits about me, I'm trying to go back and piece that cultural moment and progression together.
What was it about the women in the farm setting?
I talk about this in the prologue to the book. It's an interesting phenomenon because on the one hand, my family is full of powerful, enterprising women who are forces of nature every bit as much, if not more, than the men. In many ways, they've been our headliners, as I write. They've made it into the newspaper many times and had their own businesses and done remarkable, newsworthy things. And yet, when I think part of growing up in a Midwestern farm family, sometimes the achievements of the women and girls sometimes get lost in the more patriarchal route of inheritance. I write in the introduction that I could go back in my late 20s, I could already recite the names of my male family members, you know, back 4 or 5 generations, but I often couldn't do that with the wives. And it wasn't because I was a poor student of genealogy. It was really because the names of the wives were much harder to find in the family and local histories. That started me thinking about why that would be, beyond the obvious fact that, you know, up until a generation ago, it wasn't unusual to hear a wife referred to as, for example, my grandmother was Mrs. Ed Jack, not Julia Jack. Sometimes those names were missing because of social conventions, but oftentimes they were missing simply because maybe it was perceived that women weren't doing as dramatic things as men, maybe that weren't as history worthy. And part of what I wanted to do in this book is sort of tell the story of all the enterprising things that my own lineage of farm daughters, wives, and women and my family have done, and then trace that lineage back through history through to 2012.
You talk about that lack of identity many women had on the farm, and one of my own great aunts, we'd always call her Mrs. Mike. And that really is asking a lot of someone to basically give up their identity or be known only through their husband, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's a delicate thing. I think that we would be doing farm women an injustice to say that our mothers or our aunts or our grandmothers were this is something I talk about. You know, sometimes I think we look back with all of our supposed enlightenment of today and think, well, they weren't getting their just due, or they were oppressed, or they were limited, or they were isolated. And in some cases, of course, that was true. But in other cases, farm women, pioneering women, historically, have been such equal partners with their husbands that sometimes what one was called, what name one went by, these were all sort of sacrifices that they were willing to make for their families, their regions, the lifestyle that they wanted to live, and that their husbands in return made sacrifices often for them. So I think in some ways, looking back, even though the achievements and sometimes the names of farm women are missing from history, in some cases I think that was a bargain they would happily accept if it meant that they would be able to raise their children on the farm and keep a family farm going as full partners.
It was really, I don't know if symbiotic relationship is the term, but to have the men out in the field for the most part and the women doing all the housework, the feeding, the cleaning, the rearing of children, I mean, they couldn't exist without each other.
Absolutely. I study agricultural history, and if you look back, women had parity and equality in many of the agrarian populist parties around the 1900s, late 19th century, much earlier than they had a stake, or in some cases a voting stake in the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, et cetera. So there's a rich tradition on the plains of men and women, you know, those gender lines being blurred. I think the rest of the country likes to think of us as traditional and sometimes to condescend or to sneer. But in fact, in terms of relations between men and women, as we all know, all of us who have farm roots, There's no environment that requires greater parity and equality and greater teamwork and reciprocity than the farm. And that's borne out by the history where, again, women on the frontier and in pioneering times and in the populist agrarian parties were equal to men in many regards.
One of the things I enjoyed about the book were the interviews you had of many of these farmers' daughters. How did you go about identifying these women, and were they in general eager to tell their stories to you for the book?
Yes, they were. I mean, my mom was kind enough to sit down with me and talk about her experience. Now, that was quite unusual. You know, it was one of those moments where, as an adult son, to be formally interviewing your mom is such a strange experience. But at the same time, I sort of marveled that I hadn't thought to do it earlier. And I think that's common with all of us. We wonder why we didn't maybe set down an oral history with our grandparents, why we waited too long or so long. And so, yeah, I was lucky enough to have a number of great interviewees, the vast majority of them farm wives or farm daughters. For the most part, they were very eager to share and to talk. I think a lot of farm women are and farm daughters are very proud of their heritage. And I think sometimes in this era that we live in, when my own home state of Iowa is now 65% urban, to be a farm daughter is sometimes, as it is in my case as a farmer's son, is to feel like, you know, to kind of go around looking for people who share your heritage. And at some point, you give up at social gatherings or parties or whatever in the cities where our work sometimes calls us to go. We just end up not feeling ourselves or not talking or trying to talk about current events or something instead of the things that make us who we are and the price of corn, the price of beans, and weather conditions out on the farm. And, you know, I've gotten to a point in my life where I'm quite tired of, you know, not claiming and talking about my heritage and asking city folk to talk a little bit about where I come from and what it's meant to the country rather than always the other way around.
In addition to the personal accounts you have in the book, numerous newspaper letters, articles that you cite, talk a little bit about the research effort you undertook to get this book published.
Yeah, it was substantial. I mean, Mark Twain, I think it was, said that history doesn't repeat itself, but history rhymes. And I've always thought there's great truth to that saying. This book is both contemporary, about half of it really is devoted to women in agriculture, farm daughters now, in terms of FFA, in terms of 4-H, in terms of community-supported agriculture, in terms of urban farming, and then about half the book is sort of historical. And by historical, I mean largely picking up around the Civil War and then going through to the early 1980s. That's sort of the historical portion of the book. The historical portion was a lot of work to research. It was a lot of primary source work. I take a more of a documentary approach. Rather than editorialize, I would rather let the kind of written record from newspapers, from letters, from journals kind of speak for itself. I think from those primary sources, history arises in more organic, less kind of spun, pre-digested ways. That's something I've always enjoyed about, say, the documentaries of Ken Burns. And that's sort of what I've attempted in this book.
There's also a great chapter towards the end of the book related to Chicago and a blurb about my hometown of Libertyville, Illinois.
And, oh, wow. I didn't know that you were from Libertyville. Yeah.
And the experiment there talking about the Women's Land Army roughly around the World War I era, right?
Yeah. I live on a farm in Iowa, but I work in north central Illinois, nearer to Chicago. And so one of the great joys for me is that I also have access to some of the great history there in Chicago in terms of being an Agropolis, really America's foremost farm city. I think it could be argued that Chicago is perhaps the world's foremost farm city. And one of the great pleasures for me was to tell the story of women farmers and farm daughters as it relates to Chicago. And one of the fascinating chapters in history is the Women's Land Army and its presence in Chicago and the experimental farm in Libertyville. And of course, as you know, most of your listeners know, women were called in to do quite a bit of the farming in World War I, just as in World War II, they were called in to do a lot of the manufacturing in the absence of men. And these women's land armies really got their start in Great Britain, where they achieved quite a bit of success and quite a bit of production. And they caught on in places like Chicago, the Midwest in particular, and New York State as well, and got a lot of coverage. They were sponsored by all the, you know, Sears and Roebuck, these women farmers were, and In fact, in Libertyville, the vast majority of the women farmers were college-educated from the University of Chicago, and they had essentially decided to kind of drop out, take a break from school, and as part of the war effort, learn to plow and learn to produce farm products that they would then sell in Chicago markets, including a number of eggs. It's a fascinating tale.
What do you hope readers take away from the book? What's the main thing you want them to learn?
Many of your listeners would remember a time when they knew a farmer's daughter from a working, self-sustaining farm. If, in fact, their mother or their grandmother or great-grandmother wasn't a farmer's daughter. And it's very important to me that we all take a step back and look in a somewhat wary way at how rapidly our culture is changing and how near to extinction many of our cultural icons are becoming. And I think at moments like that, when we have such tremendous flux, it's important to stop and think, when was the last time I actually met a farmer's daughter from a working farm in the flesh? Now, there in Indiana, some of your listeners may say, well, just last week. But for the vast majority of Americans, the last time they actually encountered a farmer's daughter or farmer's son from a working farm that supports itself, where most of the income comes on the farm rather than off the farm, it's been a long, long, long time. And that has changed dramatically in most of our lifetimes. And I think that's something that we need to think about when it comes to the American character. When I say something like that, I'm sure, you know, some of your listeners are rolling their eyes and thinking, another nostalgic treatment of the farm. But I don't mean any, you know, empty or mere nostalgia. But I'm looking at the book now, and one of the historical writers that I talk about is a woman named Mary Meek Atkinson, who wrote a book in 1924 called The Woman on the Farm. And she basically says that the farmer's daughter is as typical as Lincoln is of the true American spirit. And if we seek a symbol of all that is most truly American in womanhood, we can do no better than to present this modern woman on the farm. So the book is full of lots of sort of testimonials, historical and contemporary, for just how important this icon has been to all that we've achieved as a nation and to many of our families as well.
The Midwest Farmer's Daughter, In Search of an American Icon, is the book published by Purdue University Press. More information is online at thepress.purdue.edu. Zachary Michael Jack is the author. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mike. I enjoyed it.
You're listening to WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo.